Great.
Welcome back. Welcome to Wednesday. Another So can we recap? What's our...
Why are we making spreadsheets about computers over time? What's our big question? As people that might be designing systems for organizations or businesses, if you're building a computer system, what are some of your top concerns as a system designer?
Meaning trying to figure out servers and workstations and laptops for the people on your team.
What are the things that you want to make sure your system's able to do?
What are some of your priorities? Take a peek at your little half sheet, will you? This guide that we're building on. So we did a comparison. We did the War Games, the Jurassic Park, and decided that War Games was probably actually 1975 era technology. And then Jurassic Park, 20 years ahead. We did a really nice job. I looked through these. Good job with the observations. Moving over to 3D rendering. And we'll watch this progress through. And if you look on the right, the heart of the matter, the way we want to kind of put a bow on this, the goal would be to choose one of these possible contexts. Like, where are you working? What would be an interesting computer-related field that you're actually trying to design a system for? So I just brainstormed. We can choose any context that's interesting to you. So let's take the first one, a microbio research laboratory. What kinds of things are they going to try to get their computers to do in 2019? What are some of the kinds of questions that they might be asking? Are they going to be more graphics intensive? Are they going to be more computing intensive? How would you rate some of their needs, system designer for, say, microbio? Is there an in bio right now? In bio people? Not much. We're low energy. What do you think? If you think about our core systems, so on your spreadsheet, what are the key specifications that we're trying to record for each device? Obviously, the big ones, the key components. What are the specs you're going to look at? Look at your spreadsheet. You got them in there. Yeah, memory. What, we have two types of memory. You're thinking about which one? So remember, the processor, CPU, what is, processor sits there and does math with the tick of the time, the clock. The IMSAI 8080 at 2 megahertz has a clock ticking 2,000 times a second. And it does a mathematical operation roughly every 4 times the clock ticks. So it needs what type of memory that works really fast? It's temporary and fast, just like Caleb said. That's RAM, random access memory. And what was the label we gave it?
Volatile.
Yeah, volatile, because it needs what to maintain its state? It's one and zero configuration.
Power.
Power. Yeah, you got to keep power on it. So we want to think about CPU in terms of number of cores and the clock speed, and also how much RAM is available. And these kind of march up together so that as the CPU is able to do more processes every second, we'll need more space and RAM to store the information waiting to get processed and then as it comes back out of the RAM. So in terms of specifications, we see those inch up, that as computers get more RAM, that goes along with faster CPU cycles. What are the other specs that we're trying to think about? Non-volatile, so what type of storage would be common to come with the device? And in the M size case, there was none. You got no non-volatile storage unless you bought a disk drive and plugged it into the back. So otherwise, your program disappeared whenever you turned the computer off. So thinking about non-volatile storage. And so today, we do that with what devices? We talked about, historically, tape drives. And now today, solid-state drives and normal hard disk drives, so non-volatile. And then if we do a graph of the price of non-volatile storage, what would it look like since 1975? Roughly. That. We want to be able to quantify that and actually create a tool in our spreadsheet so that we can compare the cost of that device to each of the megahertz. So we could think about this as like $460 per megahertz cycle in 1975. We'll need to figure out how we want to adjust for inflation for that. And what other characteristics? A network data rate. So what might be common data rates for an organization to secure for internet transfer in that particular year? 56K was the max you could get over the telephone line, and now you can get fiber all the way to your front door. Crazy. So what we want to be able to do then is choose a particular model that goes with each of these years that we can use as a benchmark for doing some of these calculations to decide which components of our systems are actually things that we need and that we want to maximize for the newest technology. Hey, how's it going, Jake? Anyone have choose their 1995 model yet? Ish? It can be kind of plus or minus. So I think that's probably our next step, is for everyone to have chosen a 1995 model. And I gave you a couple of resources here on this page. So the computer history timeline right underneath your table will give you rough specs of computers in their major years. We had this up last time. And so you want to do a little bit of poking around to find the actual spec site for a system that you choose so that you can fill out the spreadsheet to get the calculations right. And this is what this is an idea that I had for Monday, is what if we turned that wall in the hallway into the timeline of 75 through 2060, which is where we're going with Interstellar, and then we could actually hang, you can print out a picture of your system that you choose, a couple of pictures, and we can actually hang them on a wire as it goes along the hallway, so we can make like a display in the history of computing starting in 75. That sounds somewhat interesting. And then the particular component years that you choose, we can make an individual marker and say, my system that I choose is going to have 2015 era CPU, and I'm willing to have a power supply from back in the 90s, because the power is doing the same thing in the 90s as it's doing in the 2020s. So we want to use today as a day to firm up what those anchor computers are going to be for each of our years. And so we've got two more years to poke at. But I want to give us a chance to choose this one first. So we'll take a little bit of time on that. Who needs help with spreadsheets and feeling unsure with those? Logan's here. Does someone... Thank you.
this is a sample of what we're trying to build, of choosing a particular machine for each of the benchmark users. So the question would be, we want to figure out to what degree is the newest tech actually necessary, and when do you use the older technology, like the kind of a system design optimization.
And if you have interesting sites that are good for finding models, please help each other and tell each other. Those computer history sites, people have a lot of getting into their old computers and they have all sorts of specs. Macintosh, let's see if you got it out there. Who made that? So if you can, this is just a sample, it's a factor degree of this. So your way of organizing benchmark models for this is including things as possible so you can get back to the data and record the key specs. For doing what? Yeah, you're making your own new spreadsheet from scratch. Does it really put it into a as soon as they get the mapping software, I'm going to open it.
Just give me a chance to catch all the sites.
Yep. Okay, once you've chosen a model, do you want to pop up and stick it on the timeline? I feel like we need to keep moving. Doug has a model. Doug, if you want to come up and label yours.
I did.
So she's using one of the computers in that
room. Lightning speed. You know, I used to actually change my own oil for years.
Yeah, it's
actually a good thing to have.
Yeah, I've done it. I was actually talking to Eric about this.
Oh, no.
It's like cheaper to do it at a shop now.
It did not used to be 20 years.
I had one from Brian.
Now I agree with you.
Yeah,
when I was in the Air Force, the base always has garages for people working on cars. I actually could lift my car up above my head and walk under and do all that. That was awesome. And after I lost that ability is when I quit doing it myself.
You're absolutely right.
IBM P3330, the X86 Pentium.
Yeah, I guess getting over the X86.
What about the X86?
I guess I could have gotten rid of it, but I mean, I feel like it's important because it's very quickly after they had a 1, 2, 3, 86.
Right, right. This was the end of our X86 line.
Did you choose one?
Yeah, right. I did the PC330.
Oh, the 330. Cool.
Yeah.
And that's a server, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a server?
It's just a PC.
I guess it says PC in the title. Got it.
Next one, I think we're jumping all the way to. You can put benchmarks for
everyone.
I think mine is 2003, so yeah, she's looking for one to another.
So you don't want it right here? That seems a little close for her, but it's not actually.
We'll get a group to do some work together on Monday.
Get us some actual distance. try to convert it. I don't know if it's 400 something in the end.
400,000.
And is this a PC or a server? Power PC. There it is.
Is that a good speed? 75, 100, 16, I guess?
Good for
the time?
I look at the scale. Yeah, maybe it's something
else. Years?
My guess is that.
Like, this is the one that I wanted to do. That's what it has.
That it has. Power PC 602.
This came on 95.
Great.
That's perfect.
So, should I do this or this?
You know, yeah, it's up to you. Which one? You have one of the features. This one is more featured here. So. I think we've got a couple other books in the
interesting. Is some of the year that do you think you can handle that?
Maybe I'll find it. If you click the bottom one, you'll do this one. So that's pretty good. Is the other one? So if we select these cells, we put your edit points, we put somewhere else to get out of edit points, and then select from A2, the ones you want to grab. Don't include that top row, just down to 15. So it goes. And then we can say, grab text. Pull that column to the right. So now click anywhere to deselect. And then hover between the A and the B. And then move it over. Now, if you want to switch the rows again, you can have automatically do that by clicking the 2, which will select that whole row, and then hold and drag down all of these rows.
Okay. You ready for our next clip? I pulled up this architecture diagram of the Intel Pentium. A couple of things to start pointing out. So everything on here, everything with the checkered background, would have been fabricated onto something less than a centimeter on a side. So we're getting that sense how with computer components, the component has subcomponents, and then this subcomponent itself has subcomponents, which is what allows us to do things that are so complicated, because if each person is able to focus only on one little component, and if the communication mechanism between them is clarified, then they can put them all together. And so in the processor world, a couple of things to point out inside here, which is modern processors actually have different components to do math on integers versus floating point values. So you'll often see kind of parallel subsystems inside the processor for doing certain types of calculations very quickly. So the chip designers, as they're trying to figure out what to do for the next chip, are balancing a couple of things, which is when you are writing transistors onto the actual arithmetic logic unit where that actually does the AND, OR, or XOR, you have to decide between whether you want to embed the logic that's useful in hardware or if you want to do it in software, meaning so the bus unit is what's getting us information to and from our RAM really quickly. And so certain calculations, like video calculations, involve doing the same kind of math problem over and over and over again. And so if you find yourself doing the same math problem over and over again, if you embed it in the actual hardware circuitry of the chip, you can get it to go a lot faster. But it means that the usefulness of that chip has been narrowed because you basically hardwired it to only add. And it can't subtract, it can't divide, but it's really good at adding. It can add super duper fast. So the idea with modern CPUs is that they should be capable of doing calculations for video graphics and programming and number crunching for spreadsheets. It should be decently good at all of those, but it doesn't have to be super good at any one of them. So if you want good graphics, what you're actually buying is the same kind of thing, the same architecture of a CPU, but the logic inside of the CPU has been optimized for just doing graphics calculations. So it's not that it's a different component, it's that it is optimized for that particular type of calculation of grids of pixels and calculating the math to change the pixels at the right time every time the frame changes. So you're balancing, again, hardware and software. Hardware is super fast when you embed logic in hardware, but it is more narrow in scope, and it can only do a smaller number of things. Yeah?
Would Jensen Huang agree with you that it's as simple as that?
Nope. It's never that simple. We're playing fast and loose with programming logic. Okay, so how many of you, what's your megahertz for your 95? What are your numbers for megahertz on your benchmarks? Matt, what was your IBM PC that had,
what was that processor doing?
Anyone else?
60 to 66
megahertz. Okay, so this is right around the time where this kind of arbitrary threshold of 100 megahertz where full motion video starts becoming possible. That's where we're starting to cross this when Intel comes out with their next major line, which is the Intel Pentium in the mid-90s that has more optimized control units. So now we're going to jump to 20... Let's look at this film. Okay.
So we're going to watch a clip from Rogue Nation, Mission Impossible. It came out in 2015. So this is kind of, this is our modern technology benchmark. And we're going to see two different computers. And we're coming into our modern era, so it'll be fun to see which ones you choose for the benchmark. This film actually turned out to be a really good 115 computer scene film. Lots of, we'll get it back when we do encryption in a couple of weeks. So on your sheet, if you can flip that over and make one more little T-chart like we did on the front, sorry to interrupt, and I was just... So like we compared our Jurassic Park and War Games, we want to compare MI Rogue Nation with Interstellar, which is allegedly 2060 according to the blurb that I read. So that's putting us 40 years in the future. So this is where we're going to start. I want you to start thinking about what kinds of problems do you see the computers able to solve? What kinds of complex logic do you start seeing that it's able to carry out, if any? We'll go from there. Anyone want to do a brief synopsis of what we're seeing? Who these players are? Anyone in my fan? Anyone? Wow. My group tonight. Well, so suffice it to say, we're going to go inside the CIA, and we're going to look at some of their computers inside there.
I'm going to ask you a series of control questions.
I know. I'm going to answer truthfully, and then you're going to ask me to lie intentionally.
Say your name.
The King of Norway. So that's a lie. I'm actually third in line with my brother.
Has he been uncontacted here?
Why would he contact me?
I'm just resurfaced. This time in Cuba. That thieves behind. Tell me what you make of it.
I know he's taken up scrapbooking.
Look at the photographs, Dad. All of them are either missing or dead, everyone. All of them were government agents, Russian, French, British, Israeli, you name it. These are highly classified files, and yet Hunt had no trouble collecting them. He always seems to be a step ahead of us. I wonder how.
Are you suggesting I'm helping him?
I thought I had crossed my mind.
6 months I've been here, sifting through mountains of metadata and exabytes of encoded excrement. I have decrypted, processed, passed more data than anyone in my section.
Can we see any marks on that laptop?
And yet every week you haul me in here and you ask me the same question, just in a different way.
And today you have an answer.
You seem to think I have some kind of obligation. Nothing could be further from the truth. Ethan Hunt is still out there in the field, and I am stuck here answering for it. We are not friends. I owe him nothing.
So we would say this computer is capable of doing what? What kind of signals is this computer having to process?
Biometric
signals. Now, we don't know exactly what the physical setup is. We're wondering.
He's got a strap around his chest. It looks like a modified polygraph.
Right. Do you have a sense that all that processing could be going on in this laptop, or do you think it's hooked up to a larger processor somewhere?
I don't think there's anything too far-fetched.
Yeah. So this is, I think that we're at the stage where that laptop is able to do some, do that level of rudimentary signal processing coming in just sitting on the table. So now we're going to, so this is kind of current era-ish. And now we're going to jump to 2060. So again, try to make some observations about what you see the computer doing, how big is it, what components do you see in it. I think we saw that this one has a built-in camera and something to note there. They have some other, we'll jump back to this one. There's a lot of tech in there. Okay, and now for Interstellar. Matthew McConaughey is a disgruntled farmer. Used to be NASA pilot, and now is farming. We're in an age in the world where a invasive species is slowly getting rid of the Earth's ability to process food for humans. So times are tight, and so he has come across a signal, or he's decrypted or decoded a set of coordinates, and he's going to go on a trip with his daughter to try to find out what's at this particular set of coordinates. So we need to go.
Yeah. I'm dropping Tom, then hang to town. Want to clean that up? Finish praying to it.
Not Morse, but it's binary. Thick is one, thin is zero. Coordinates.
Hey! What are you doing?
Well, you think this is funny? Huh?
You and me Didn't you bring the bolt cutters?
Yes.
Find this place.
Where's my daughter?
You have the coordinates for this facility marked on your map. Where did you get those coordinates?
Where's my daughter?
Don't make me take you down again. Sit down.
Please, I think you're a Marine now. Marines don't exist anymore. I got grunts like you mowing my grass.
Where did you find those coordinates?
I was shooting up as like a lawnmower. And I'll turn you to an overqualified vacuum cleaner.
No, you won't.
Guys, back down, please. Yeah, you're taking a risk. He's an ex-military security. They're old and their control units are unpredictable.
It's what the government can spare.
Who are you?
Dr. Brand.
I knew Dr. Brand once. He was a professor.
What makes you think I'm not?
Well, it's near as key. Please, Dr. Brand. I'm scared for my daughter and I want her by my side. You give me that, I'll tell you anything you want to know.
Daughter is fine. Was a very smart mother.
It's pretty clear you don't want any visitors.
There's our 2060. We're going to do one last shot with TARS to think about what kinds of information is this robot able to process? Is it able to process emotional information? Is it able to process visual and audio cues, obviously? So we'll just get one more. They're getting ready to, they're traveling to Saturn, so they're getting ready to go down in their cryosleep. One last interaction, watch this.
I'm going to be frightening.
Months to Mars. Counter-orbital slingshot around. 14 months to Saturn. Nothing's changed on that. Why are you whispering? They can't hear you.
Dr. Brand and Edmund. Hey, close?
I wouldn't know.
Maybe 90% wouldn't know or 10% wouldn't know.
I also have a discretion saving, Cooper.
Yeah, that big machine, that's what we want to think about. So this is where it gets a little bit fun with the project, which is you're not going to be able to find a benchmark model that hasn't been made yet. But it'll be, I want to give you a chance to do little poking around to see what you can see about future AI technologies, and if there's a company or a product that you feel comfortable putting on some date in the future as maybe it's nanotechnology, maybe it's using atomic charges to actually store ones and zeros instead of electrical signals and transistors. So what could you find way out here on Wikipedia or internet searching for potential future benchmark computers? So what might be a standard processing speed? What can you find out about what scientists believe will happen if you take our Moore's Law? So if you just pop this out, this is the last thing I'll say for today, which is... What was Moore's Law? What's his insight again? Someone summarize that for us at the top of that chart. This chart shows the relationship between year and what do we have on the left?
Processing power.
Yeah, in this case, transistor count. Now, again, what's one thing that we notice about the scale on the left-hand side that's important? This isn't going 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. What's going on over on the left that's mind-boggling? 50 to 100,000, that's... What was that? Yeah, this is the number of transistors on each processing unit.
Sort of like modified log.
Yeah, it's this weird... It's a modified log. So a log would be 10... 100, 1,000. This is not quite there because it's trying to give us something that looks generally linear if we take something and keep doubling it roughly every 2 years. And if the scale were not weird log, it'd end up looking something like this with this massive increase. But at the beginning, from 1970 to 78, so over 8 years of doubling, we went from 2,000 to 10,000, so that's only a factor of 5 increase. But once we get up here and we start going from 500 million to 1 billion process or 1 billion transistors, that represents a lot more transistors than 8,000. We were talking another 500 million. So we change the scale over here. Now, from an engineering standpoint, could we keep doubling the speed every year indefinitely? Or doubling transistor count every 2 years indefinitely? Doug, you have some thoughts on this?
I had no intention to mention Jensen Huang once, let alone twice, but he's publicly stated Moore's Law is dead.
Yep.
And if anybody should know, I'm not saying he's right, but I'm saying you should listen to him, what he says, and challenge it.
Can you tell everyone who this person is?
I'm sorry. He's the CEO of NVIDIA. If you game and like I think they're arguably the best graphics cards in the world. So, I mean, they're like the studs of graphics cards, especially if you like gaming or high-intensity graphics processing.
And so to say that Moore's Law is dead is to say what about computer technology? That computers don't get any faster?
No, we've reached the top. We've reached the physics, in the sense of physics, materials. We've reached the limits of the materials available.
At current manufacturing technology, right. The interesting thing about Moore's Law is that people had, they've been waiting for the trend to go like this. And for several decades, people were anticipating this happening in the 90s, that engineers would stop being able to come up with ways to pack more transistors onto a single transistor or a single chip. But that's continued on until now. We're actually starting to see different ways of increasing power, that at some point you will, if the transistors are close enough together, and we're talking so on a card, if you've got 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter and you have 1 billion transistors all etched in and connected end to end, timing engineers are actually timing how long it takes electrical signals to travel down pieces of metal that are nanometers long and measuring it in micro and picoseconds, millionths and billionths of a second. That's the level of timing that's going on to try to cram modules of transistors that do certain types of logic, getting closer and closer, and then stack and stack. And then, as Doug was saying, at some point, the interference, you get the components are small enough that they stop behaving like their original intention. So we get stuck. So we figure out, how do we keep the chips the same size and wire them all together? So Google, for example, instead of saying we're going to make Google search engine with huge, powerful mainframes with fast processors, Google made the decision in the 90s to say, we can get old processors really cheap. What if we find a way to create networks of processors and use thousands of economy-priced consumer-grade processors? And so that's what they've done. The Google search engine is basically 2 million consumer-grade PCs in racks, all wired together to systematically figure out where the best place to do search algorithms are. So they moved away from saying we want the biggest, fastest chips, so we have one super fast chip. Instead, we're going to have a whole bunch of mediocre chips and figure out clever algorithms and software to wire them all together. And because they're so cheap and so small, they can just swap them out and throw them away when they die and don't have a big interruption. So that was their big insight, is moving away from mainframes and let's just wire up the cheap, smaller ones. So what happens when we have to find other ways to make chips? So cool. So I will let you to some of your searching to see what you might put out here. Got some pretty familiar 2015 technologies we saw in Mission Impossible.
Okay.
So what's our time? We're about 15. So I would encourage you to try to get a benchmark, at least two more benchmarks, and then we'll start building formal diagrams of the timeline. Come Monday, get them up on the wall out there. Okay?
Question. We're coming up with the 2060, so are we just limiting to processor RAM or more capabilities?
Yeah, this is the chance for you. Whatever rows you need to add to incorporate the new abilities. That's absolutely what we want. Okay.